Hello, I'm Matthew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 15th of July, 2026.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Matthew, Angela, Peter, Muhammad, Ellen, Mina, Simon, and of course not forgetting Soundings contributor Lindsay. In this week's edition, we find out what's been happening at Beacon with the latest update from Helen and Muhammad, as all the latest news from across the Black Country. With this week marking Black Country Day, we celebrate all things Black Country. There's a feature focus on one of the region's proudest musical success stories from Beacon volunteer and Talking News contributor David Smith. We have some Boston fiddle and celebrate a culinary delight and delicacy of the Black Country, the humble orange chip. Staying with the theme of food, and you'll have to be very alert for this week's quiz from Soundings contributor Lindsay, where you'll need to identify as many fruits as you can in a juice bar audio-based I Spy brain teaser challenge. And established over 60 years, with thanks to the Gentlemen Songsters, we share a full rendition of the re-recorded version of the Black Country Anthem. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. And with thanks to Guide Dogs and St. Albans and District Talking Newspapers, we hear from Charlotte the Trainer and her doggy trainees with the latest episode from the Puppy Academy. Local news to start, though, with me, Matthew, Angela, and Peter.
Members of the Birmingham and Solihull and Black Country NHS Joint ICB Cluster Board will meet this week to discuss urgent and emergency care performance across the area. And figures show the total number of hours lost over 15 minutes outside A&Es had risen from 4,841 in April to 6,162 in May, and the figure for last May, last year, was 3,205. The worst performing NHS trust in the Black Country was Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, with 2,364 hours lost, closely followed by the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust on 2,296. Ambulances lost 1,280 hours at Sandwell and West Birmingham Hospitals NHS Trust in May, while Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust saw 221 hours lost. The report to the board said there was an urgent need to address lost hours for handovers. It also said that the 45-minute maximum handover was brought into effect from February the 26th, and all the trusts were working towards that. The report added, out of hospital and UEC programme are working collaboratively to ensure that hospital avoidance pathways are being fully utilised. Performance and activity continued to be monitored daily by the Strategic Command Centre. That team have full access to SHREWD, which is a live stream system that monitors A&E, ambulance, 111, admissions, discharges, patient transport, and virtual ward capacity. And silver calls are in place twice daily to address any pressures in real time.
keeping with the theme of meetings and consultations, and residents of Wolverhampton are being invited to come and meet the team behind the plans for St George's, as Capital and Centric hosts a public consultation this month. The drop-in event will take place on Thursday, the 16th of July, from 3pm to 7pm at Lupo Lounge, giving local residents, businesses and community groups the chance to get a first look at the emerging vision, have a chat with the team, and help shape what comes next. Capital and Centric are big believers that the best neighbourhoods are shaped by the people who'll actually use them. That's why they're keen to meet future neighbours, hear what people love about Wolverhampton, what's missing from the city centre, and what they'd like to see at St George's. The vision would transform the long-empty former Sainsbury's and St George's Church site into a lovely new neighbourhood, bringing people back into the city centre and creating somewhere that's buzzing from morning coffee through to evening drinks. The plans include 370 new homes, a food hall packed with local independents, new public squares and green courtyards, alongside places to work, study, socialise and spend time together. There would also be greener walking and cycling routes through the neighbourhood, better accessibility, more planting, seating and lighting, and plenty of space for people to hang out. The Grade 2 listed St George's Church would remain at the heart of the neighbourhood, surrounded by new public spaces and courtyards. The team is also exploring ways the building could support community activities, events and leisure uses, helping bring it back into everyday city centre life. The latest plans have already been shaped by conversations with students, young people, older residents, community groups, local organisations, and the University of Wolverhampton at a roundtable event held earlier this year. Now the team wants to hear from even more people before the proposals continue to evolve. Martin Cruz, Development Director at Capital and Centric, said, "We're looking forward to meeting more of our future neighbours and hearing what people think. St George's has been sitting empty for too long, and we've got a real opportunity to create something special here. But the best ideas often come from the people who know the area best." So, whether you're excited about more homes, greener spaces, independent food and drink, or just curious about what's been happening on the site, we'd love you to come along, grab a brew, and have a chat. Councillor Stephen Simkins, City of Wolverhampton Council leader, said, "Capital and Centric have an excellent track record in delivering complex urban regeneration schemes, and this is a chance to deliver much-needed homes alongside events and public spaces, shops and amenities, creating opportunities for our communities and enhancing lives at the heart of the city. I would urge people to go along to the event, take a look how the proposals are shaping up for St George's, and have a say on the future of what is set to be a transformational neighbourhood in our city centre." The consultation takes place at Lupo Lounge on Thursday, the 16th of July, between 3pm and 7pm. Everyone is welcome to drop in. Can't make it on the day? The consultation materials will also be available online, and feedback can be submitted via a digital form at Capital and Centric. The consultation closes on Monday, the 3rd of August, 2026, with feedback helping to shape the final plans before submission at the end of the year to the City of Wolverhampton Council. Please note, the event is taking place on the first floor at Lupo Lounge, and there is no lift access. Anyone unable to use the stairs will be met downstairs by a member of the team and shown the plans.
Now then, if I mentioned that I saw the Gritters out this week, you'd probably think I'm going a bit yampy. However, highways crews across Staffordshire are preparing for soaring temperatures again, with four Gritters on standby to help keep roads safe as the county faces another spell of hot weather. With temperatures expected to reach 30 degrees centigrade over the coming days, Staffordshire County Council has positioned four vehicles around the county to spread granite dust on roads where the intense heat causes surfaces to soften. Although gritters are most commonly associated with icy winter conditions, they are also used during periods of extreme heat. High temperatures can cause the bitumen in road surfaces to soften and rise to the top, a process known as fatting up, leaving roads slippery. To combat the problem, highways teams spread granite dust, which absorbs the excess bitumen and helps stabilise the road surface. The council said crews treated around 30 roads across Staffordshire several times during the hot weather in June and will continue to monitor conditions closely over the coming days, responding wherever necessary. Motorists are also being urged to take extra care by planning journeys in advance, carrying plenty of drinking water and allowing extra time for travel, particularly during the hottest part of the day. Peter Mason, Staffordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Strategic Highways, said gritters are just as important in summer as they are in winter. Most people think of gritters as something we use in winter, but they're just as important when temperatures rise and road surfaces are put under pressure by the heat, he said. Our highways teams will be keeping a close eye on conditions over the coming days, and we have 4 gritters ready across the county to spread granite dust wherever it's needed. We would also ask motorists to take sensible steps in the heat, plan journeys, carry water and allow extra time, especially if travelling during the hottest part of the day.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mo here from Beacon, and here's the latest news from across our charity. We'll start with a lovely look back at a fantastic afternoon of live music here at the Beacon. A huge thank you to talented pianist Richard Harvey, who kindly volunteered his time to perform a special recital for our members. Members enjoyed a wonderful musical journey through the ages with a fantastic selection of well-loved pieces from different eras. And with the hot weather, everyone appreciated a refreshing ice lolly to help keep cool while enjoying the magical performance. We've shared a highlights video on our social media, so if you didn't get a chance to listen live, do have a look. And once again, a huge thank you to Richard for giving his time and helping create such a memorable afternoon for our members. Next, it's time for another Teen Tuesday. This week, we introduced Sarah, our fundraising manager. Sarah shared that one of her favorite parts of the job is organizing Beacon's fundraising events, with the most recent being our Beacon fashion show. She also let us in on a fun fact that she's a massive football fan. If you've seen the video on social media, why not head over and say hello to Sarah in the comments below. Sticking with fundraising, we've also like to say a huge thank you to the West Midlands Billiards and Snooker Association, who very kindly donated £722.30 to support Beacon's work with people living with sight loss. It was a fantastic evening, and Sarah from our fundraising team even had the chance to meet some snooker greats, including 1991 world champion John Parrott, 2015 world champion Stuart Billingham, and professional referee Tatiana Williston. A massive thank you to everyone involved. for their generosity and continued support. Every penny raised helps us to continue making a visible difference for people living with sight loss across our local communities. Now, a huge congratulations to England on their fantastic victory over Norway to reach the FIFA World Cup semi-finals. If you listened to our special World Cup edition of the Beacon Update before the match, thank you so much. In that episode, we looked at how spending more time watching evening football matches on screens can affect our eye health and shared some simple tips to help protect your eyes. If you missed it and want to catch up before the semi-finals, it's still available on our Audio Boom page. Back at Beacon, we had such a special evening at our refashion show. A huge heartfelt thank you to everyone who came along for a wonderful night of fashion, fun and fundraising. It was fantastic to see the room filled with smiles, encouragement and community spirit as we celebrated the joy of pre-loved fashion together. Our brilliant models brought confidence, personality and plenty of sparkle to the catwalk, showing just how stylish and sustainable second-hand fashion can be. We were especially proud to see some of our very own Beacon members taking to the runway, and it was wonderful to welcome two twin girls with sight loss who also modeled on the evening. They both did an incredible job and received a huge round of applause. A very special thank you also goes to Jan Burns MBE, who hosted the evening so warmly and helped make it such an uplifting celebration. And thank you to everyone who volunteered, donated, modeled, shopped the looks, or simply came along to support us. Every bit of support helps us at Beacon to continue providing life-changing support and services for people living with sight loss across the Black Country. Looking ahead now, we're excited to launch our free summer program for children and young people living with sight loss, while being inclusive of all disabilities too. Activities include VI cricket, two holiday clubs, and a Walls Foundation activity morning, giving children the opportunity to make new friends, build confidence, try new activities, and enjoy fantastic summer together. If you'd like to find out more or book a place, please call on 01902880111 or email us on inquiries@beaconvision.org. We'd love to see you at any of our events. We've also published our very first edition of our brand new quarterly Children and Young People's newsletter. Inside, you'll find updates from the team, upcoming activities, useful tips and tricks, a joke corner, ways to get involved, meet the team, and so much more. Accessible versions can be found on our website, beaconvision.org, and if you'd like to receive future editions, just get in touch by calling 01902880111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org, and we'll add you to the mailing list. And finally this week, here's what's coming up in this week's community activity program. On Monday the 13th of July, we headed out on a tandem bike ride. The ride departed at 10 o'clock in the morning and returned at 1 p.m. with qualified instructors and Beacon staff providing support throughout the event. On Wednesday the 15th of July, we're enjoying a gentle walk through Sedgley, departing Beacon at 10:30. There'll be plenty of time to enjoy the scenery, have a chat and stop for a bite to eat before making our way back to the centre. And then on Friday the 17th of July, we're off for a morning of 10-pin bowling at 10-pin Dudley. We'll be leaving Beacon at 10:30 and returning at around 1:30. You can find the full programme of July activities in this month's Lifestyle newsletter, along with accessible versions available on the Beacon website. If you'd like to book on to any of this week's activities or future activities, contact Daniel Clark on email dclark@beaconvision.org or call 01902880111. That's all from me for this week. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And we'll catch you next week here on the Beacon Update. But for now, goodbye.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
Ask anyone across the region about orange chips and their eyes will light up at memories of trips to the chip shop for a big bag of chips glowing with colour and a taste that is soft, crunchy, tangy and sweet. It's part of the culinary landscape of the Black Country, spoken of in the same way and with the same reverence as oatcakes in North Staffordshire, pasties in Cornwall and jellied eels in East London, and can be found in chip shops all across the Black Country. With a stunning mural appearing on the side of a chippy in Quinton depicting England players Stourbridge-born midfielder Jude Bellingham and Hales Owen-born attacking midfielder Morgan Rogers eating the Black Country staple, it's a good time to take a look at what makes an orange chip, where it originates from and where the best places are to get them. So here is a guide to the humble orange chip. What are orange chips? Simply put, the orange chip is a regular potato chip which is deep fried in a thick orange coloured batter and which comes out and into the serving area crispy, glowing with orange colouring and full of flavour. How do they become orange? There's a number of different ways that chip shops work to create their orange chips, with some owners having recipes they swear by and keep secret to maintain the magic. One way of creating the orange chips is through adding different colourings or flavourings to make the batter change colour, including using paprika, turmeric and food dye. Other places discovered that the batter they were using for the fish had turned an orangey colour and experimented with putting some of the batter in the oil for frying the chips, with the results being well received. However, if you ask a lot of chip shop owners, they will tell you that the recipe is a long-held family recipe and they are sworn to secrecy, so it can be a mystery at the same time. Where were orange chips first created? The origins of who created orange chips first is subject to a lot of discussion, with many shops claiming to be the place which did it first. If we go by the place which claimed to do it earliest, then the concept of orange chips may have originated from the Queen's Fish Bar in Great Bridge. The owner of the Black Country Chippy, Dean Gilbert, has said that his grandfather, Albert Walls, had created the first orange chips in the late 1950s after making the chip late in the evening to use up the extra batter, which was a very dark colour. He said, "There has been a lot of debate over the years about who invented the orange chips, but every time we have read about it in the Express and Star, my granddad has been adamant that it was him in Queenie's. The batter we used was very dark, almost orange, and one night he put some on the chips to see what it was like, and the customers loved it. They insisted on having it like that every time. We have carried on the family tradition at the Black Country Chippy, and despite the competition, we have kept all our regulars. Some have been coming for years." The mural was erected ahead of Saturday's 2026 World Cup quarter-final match between England and Norway, which saw both Jude Bellingham and Morgan Rogers contribute towards England's 2-1 win after extra time. Hopefully, they'll be serving up more of the same Boston delights in tonight's, Wednesday the 15th of July, semi-final encounter against current world champions Argentina.
And you'll have to be very alert for this week's quiz. From Soundings contributor Lindsay, where you'll need to identify as many fruits as you can in a juice bar audio-based I Spy brain teaser challenge.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Clean sweep brain teaser at the juice bar. Welcome to Lindsay's Ear Spy activity for yourself or with others. Listen carefully to this one-sided imaginary telephone conversation and find out how many fruit names you can recognise along the way. The correct number will be announced at the end. Asked me to open up early, expecting a few crates of pineapples. They're planning a Hawaii-themed weekend, as business has been a bit slow. I don't know why, Pip. The shop is opposite the fitness centre and en route to the train station, so should be prime position for health-conscious consumers. Think it's been getting to Bill Berry, the owner. His twin sons, Logan Berry and Blueberry, have stepped in to mind the place for their parents so they can get away for a short break. On a scenic coach trip of the Scottish Highlands. Yes, they should be taking the delivery, but Muggins here said I was cleaning, happy to help. Besides, having a nose at the reviews while I wait. No worries, as you say, Pip. All perks of the job. Though not sure what this customer was expecting in a trendy juice bar. 3 stars. Vast amount of flavour choices. Too confusing when ordering. Should have less blends and more obvious well-known drinks, like plain orange or apple juice. Took me over 15 minutes just to decide, and that ate into my shopping trip. Pauline, Newcastle under Lyme. Actually, I quite fancy the antioxidant overload. Got cranberry, blackberry, and strawberry. Sort of a burst of woodland wonder. Might ask for a takeaway bottle later. This couple are from your neck of the woods, and they raved about this month's special. 5 stars. Awesome place. And the special oceanic twist made us both feel homesick as missing the taste of fresh jackfruit, although addition of the kiwi did affect the texture slightly. All in all, a great pick-me-up after the gym session. Mango Grove and Cherry Orchard, Australia. Now, about this medieval fundraiser for the community gardening project. I haven't been able to confirm dates when Nick is available yet, let alone find costumes. Funnily enough, the twins are organised in advance for that. Even got names for their fantasy characters, Dragon Fruit and Black Currant. Well, Knights of the Round Table vibe, of course, Pip. Would expect nothing less of that pair of drama enthusiasts. Talking of loyalty to the table, 1 star. Nothing clearly stated anywhere about how long the free commuters grab smoothie offer lasted, which turns out to be specifically consisting of grape, raspberry, apricot, and banana. Would have been sensible to have a drinks loyalty voucher to be ticked off per purchase, like other places do for coffee or tea for return customers. Dafydd, Port Marion, Gwynedd, Wales. Pip, I'm not that old. How would I know what fruits were available in medieval times? They can always invent something for the occasion. Seems they managed to blend this drink to order. 5 stars. Innovative tasting session on Thursday night. Discovered all sorts of exotic, delicious fruits I had never tried before. Complimentary blend of own favourites, pomegranate and plum, as a gift, was appreciated. Planning to buy more as family gifts. Ganesh, Palmer India. Right you are. Big class today? Well, best let you get on and set up the Pilates workout equipment. Bye for now.
Cheers for those questions. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. For generations of families, a day at Alton Towers meant more than roller coasters and queues. It meant the excitement of setting off early, the first sight of the lake, and memories that seemed to last long after the journey home. When the Staffordshire attraction began its modern theme park era in 1980, it quickly became a place woven into childhood, school holidays and family days out. For many visitors, one of the gentlest memories is of the white swan boats gliding slowly across the water from 1987 until 2003, a peaceful picture postcard ride that still brings back smiles for those who remember climbing aboard. And one such visitor is Staffordshire superfan Jenny Walker, 38, who became determined to own one of the fiberglass swans after growing up riding them at the Staffordshire theme park near her home. She said, "It wouldn't be to everyone's taste, but it's an iconic thing. It brings back so many happy memories of waiting in line with excitement to go on the ride." The famous swan boats attraction carried up to 9 visitors around Alton Towers Lake in giant white swans between 1987 and 2003. Jenny from Wetley Rocks, Staffordshire, said she spent much of her childhood at the park and always loved the gentle ride around the water. She said, "We live near Alton Towers and I spent a lot of my childhood there. It just feels like a part of history." When the ride closed in 2003, the 16 swans were sold off and scattered across the country, becoming prize collectors' items. Over the years, some have appeared at caravan parks, schools and private homes, while others have reportedly changed hands for substantial sums. Jenny said, "It was difficult because one had recently sold on eBay and there was an offer, which was later retracted, for £500,000. We know that another sold in our town for £30,000. It was hard to compare prices. Some people were asking for daft money." Despite the cost, Jenny eventually spent thousands of pounds acquiring one of the increasingly rare boats. She launched a lengthy hunt, contacting owners, collectors and enthusiasts in the hope of persuading somebody to part with one. Jenny said most people said they wanted to pass them down the generations. Eventually, she set her sights on a swan owned by the Lion Bar and Club in Walsall. The venue's licensee, Zach Cumpage, had owned the boat for years and used it as a stage and photo prop at performances and events. Jenny said, "At first, they said they weren't interested in parting with the swan because they used it on stage. But we bartered back and forth for months and months." Her persistence eventually paid off when Zach agreed to sell. Jenny said, "It was amazing. We were ecstatic." The swan was transported home on a lorry, with Jenny and her family following behind as it made its way up the M6. She said, "Even when we were driving down the motorway with it, everyone was beeping their horns because they recognised it. It's so well known and so loved." The boat has now taken pride of place outside the family's home, where it has become a favourite of Jenny's daughter, Summer Jane, 3. Jenny said, "We went to nursery one day and when she got home, she just couldn't believe what was in the garden." Jenny's quest to find a swan came after she bought a house that had become a local landmark thanks to one of the original Alton Towers boats standing outside for around 15 years. The swan was sold before she completed their purchase, leaving the family determined to find another. Jenny said, "I remember always seeing it as a child. Now I've got my own family, the house came up for sale and we immediately knew it was the house with the swan. But in between the time it was listed for sale and we bought the house, someone local had spotted the chance to offer money for the boat." Determined to restore the landmark, she eventually succeeded in bringing another original swan back to the village. And despite the soaring value of the nostalgic attractions, Jenny insists this one won't be going anywhere. She said, we're never going to part with it.
Now then, staying with Staffordshire's waterways. A wild baby beaver has been filmed venturing out on its own for the first time, marking the first known beaver to be born in the wild in Staffordshire for more than 400 years. Staffordshire Wildlife Trust has released trail camera footage of the youngster after keeping its arrival secret for several weeks to protect the vulnerable animal. The historic birth comes after the Trust revealed earlier this year that it had been monitoring a small number of wild beavers living in the county. The animals are believed to have originated from illegal releases, sometimes referred to as beaver bombing, by unknown rewilding enthusiasts. However, conservationists withheld one crucial detail. One of the adult females appeared to be lactating, suggesting she had given birth to kits inside her burrow. The Trust chose not to make the information public until the youngster had been safely spotted above ground. Nick Mott, Species Recovery Manager at Staffordshire Wildlife Trust, said, during their first few weeks, beaver kits are incredibly vulnerable to predators, such as mink and otters, so we were really cautious about sharing this exciting news until we'd had sightings of the kit above ground. This is amazing news. Although the circumstances in which the beavers arrived here are less than ideal, it shows Staffordshire a suitable habitat for them to thrive and breed once again. So far, only one kit has been captured on the Trust's trail cameras. Mr. Mott said it was not yet known whether it was an only offspring or whether any siblings had fallen victim to predators. He added, thankfully, this kit looks healthy, and it's feeding without either its parents present, which is another good sign. We'll continue to monitor this family as the kit grows, along with other beavers in different areas, but we're yet to see any signs of breeding elsewhere. The discovery comes as 2026 looks set to be a landmark year for beaver conservation in Staffordshire. Work is about to begin on a fenced beaver enclosure at Craddock's Moss Nature Reserve near Madeley, where the Trust plans to release a pair of beavers this autumn. Conservationists hope the animals will help restore the degraded lowland bog, improving habitats for a wide range of wildlife. And the Trust is also continuing plans for a wider wild beaver reintroduction programme after the government confirmed in 2025 that licensed releases into the wild would be permitted. A future license application to Natural England could eventually see up to 50 beavers reintroduced across suitable parts of Staffordshire over the next decade. Often described as nature's engineers, beavers are renowned for creating wetlands that support wildlife, while also helping reduce flood risk, improve water quality, and store water during periods of drought. The newly released footage offers a first glimpse of what conservationists hope is the beginning of a long-term return for one of Britain's most influential native mammals. A retired police dog has had specialist surgery to reconstruct his spine after a charity said years of working had taken its toll on his body. Captain, a German Shepherd, was forced to retire in 2022 after 3 years of working for West Midlands Police after rupturing his cruciate ligament in 2021. He later suffered significant spinal damage, and the 9-year-old has now undergone major surgery to 2 discs that had degenerated and were putting pressure on his spinal cord. The Thin Blue Paw Foundation, a charity supporting retired police dogs with vet treatment, has called on government to do more to support such dogs. And although a fundraising appeal was launched in 2024 to pay for the treatment, vets determined Captain was not yet strong enough to undergo treatment, so the operation was delayed while he underwent therapy to strengthen him. Captain was in theatre for 4 hours as the discs were repaired and some bone was removed. He stayed in the vets for 5 days before he was discharged and has now begun a long recovery journey at home, including strict crate rest, followed by some physiotherapy and hydrotherapy. Captain's owner, PC Marcus Cottrell, also handled him during his police career and has been at his side through the treatment, including sleeping on the sofa to keep him company as he recovers. The pair qualified in 2018 and won the Police Chief Certificate of Achievement. Cottrell, from Solihull, said, "Captain is fearsome, but also extremely sociable. He detained countless criminals, including a suspect who'd stabbed 2 people, and used his nose to find people on the run, as well as weapons used in incidents. Captain is so special, he's my best mate, and he's always with me. He was my partner at work, and now he's my partner in retirement." Thin Blue Paw Foundation founder, Kieran Stanbridge, said, "For the last 2 years, we've been supporting Captain, as he had twice weekly hydrotherapy to improve his mobility and build up his strength, as well as daily medication to manage his pain. The foundation has funded all of his treatment to date, including diagnostic tests and consultations, 2 MRI scans, and 198 hydrotherapy sessions, and the pioneering surgery at a total cost of around £20,000. Thankfully, the hydrotherapy helped prepare Captain, and he had his surgery on Tuesday before returning home to recover." Stanbridge added that police dogs lead a physically demanding life, and that wear and tear from his career had left his mark on Captain. "We're proud to be there for dogs like Captain. We believe the government should be doing more to support these dogs when they retire," he added. The Thin Blue Paw Foundation has launched a campaign calling on the government to fund pensions for police dogs to help owners struggling to find insurance for their dogs to cover veterinary costs. Cottrell said that without the continued support of the Thin Blue Paw Foundation, "I fear that due to my own circumstances, Captain may have been put to sleep. I will be eternally grateful for the charity and its supporters for giving Captain a second chance at having a happy retirement." Now then, from retired police dogs and the Thin Blue Paw Foundation to guide dogs and Charlotte the trainer from the Puppy Academy, where we have the 9th episode in the series following the training process for puppies who set out to become assistance dogs. This episode covers buddy dog open days and highlights retraining opportunities for 2 dogs. With thanks to Guide Dogs and St Albans and District Talking newspaper for sharing this series. So, introducing Puppy Academy, Episode 9, Open Days and Retraining Opportunities.
TNF Soundings.
Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, back with another update on what's happening in Buddy Dogs, our support dog scheme for children with sight loss. This month, I've been doing lots of planning for an event that I'm holding in the summer for families who already have a buddy dog and for families who are considering whether it's right for them. These events are really fun and interactive, with activities for a range of age groups. We hold these events at our guide dog centres and have tables with different activities set up so the families can choose what they'd like to do. My favourite activity is dog treat making. We ask the children to weigh out flour using talking scales, then peel and mash a banana into the mix and crack an egg in. They then have to spoon the mixture into moulds ready to be microwaved. We bag up the treats and the child can take them home for their dog or donate them to a family with a dog if they don't have their own yet. This is a pretty messy activity and the dogs often want to be quite involved, but it is really fun and gets children interacting with each other. Other activities include teaching their dog a new trick, like a spin or a paw, which helps to improve their bond with their dog, and a sensory treasure hunt that encourages them to use their sense of hearing, touch, and smell. These activities can be quite chaotic in a really fun way. Having a big space full of children and dogs comes with its challenges, but we often hear that the children really enjoy and benefit from the interaction, and it's a good way for prospective buddy dog owners to hear some real life experiences. Aside from this, I had several families waiting for matches, so I have been looking at all dogs currently coming out of training in the southwest to see if any were suitable. This month there weren't any dogs leaving training that would have matched my families, but there was a dog that had been removed from the breeding programme. She had been unreceptive to mating and had not conceived in 2 years, but is an otherwise lovely dog and at 4 years old would have been too old to begin guide dog training. I felt that she would be a nice match for one of my families who would benefit from a slightly older, calmer dog, as they are a busy family with an active life. We are now waiting for the dog to recover from her spay, but once she is back in full health, I will place her with this family who are really excited to meet her. I am hoping that in the coming weeks, I will have a few more suitable dogs so that I can get all of my waiting families matched. Buddy dog matching is typically quite quick. The majority of families will have their dog within 6 months of joining the waiting list. And lastly, I have done a few visits to see families who have a buddy dog but need a hand with some training. One such visit was to a family with an excitable golden retriever who was greeting strangers too enthusiastically on walks. I never turned down an opportunity to work directly in behaviour management due to my history as a guide dog trainer, so I really enjoyed joining the family on a walk and giving them tips on how to manage and correct their dog's lunging and jumping. We were already seeing improvements by the end of the walk, and the parents were feeling much more confident to manage their dog's behaviour, as well as walking safely with their two children. A big part of being in the buddy dog team is providing ongoing support to families in order to get the best possible behaviour from the dog, and it's an aspect of the job that I really love. That's all from me now. I'll be back soon with more tales from guide dogs.
DNF Soundings.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. After plenty of very warm and settled weather, things are looking a little more changeable from Friday 17th of July through to Thursday 23rd of July. It will still feel warm at times, but there should be more comfortable feel overall, with sunny spells, cloudier moments and the odd shower never too far away. UV levels are still expected to be high at times, especially when the sun breaks through. So please keep the sun cream, hat and water close by if you're out and about. Pollen levels may also remain on the higher side during the drier and sunnier spells, though any showers should help freshen up things for a while, with sunrise and sunset times as follows. Around 5:05 a.m. on Friday morning, closer to 5:14 a.m. by Thursday for the sunrise. Around 9:22 p.m. on Friday, easing back to around 9:14 p.m. by Thursday for the sunset. Friday 17th should start mainly dry and bright with some good sunny spells through the morning. This is a small chance of shower later on, but for many of us, it should be a pleasant day with highs around 26 degrees. Saturday 18th of July looks a touch fresher. With a mix of sunshine and cloud, it should still feel warm enough in any brighter breaks with temperatures around 24 to 25 degrees, though there may be a few shower spots around as the day goes on. Sunday 19th of July should keep that relaxed summer feel with bright spells, some cloud and gentle breeze. Most places should stay dry for long periods and temperatures are expected to sit in the low mid-20s. Moving into Monday 20th of July, it is looking fairly settled to begin with. There should be some sunshine around but also more cloud at times, with highs around 23 to 24 degrees. Tuesday 21st of July may feel a little more challengeable, with sunny intervals, but also the chance of a passing shower. Nothing too dramatic is expected at this stage, just one of those days where it may be worth keeping a light jacket or umbrella nearby. Wednesday 22nd of July looks to continue in a similar way, with a bit of everything, some brightness, some cloud, and perhaps the odd shower drifting through. Temperatures should remain pleasant, generally in the low 20s. By Thursday 23rd of July, conditions may still be on the mixed side, with further showers possible, but also some dry and brighter breaks. It should feel warm rather than hot, which may come as a welcome change after all the recent heat. So there we have it, a warm but more relaxed week ahead with some sunshine, a few showers and temperatures feeling a little easier to manage. Do take care, have a wonderful week and enjoy the weather.
Now, here come the quiz
answers.
Did you recognise the fruit mentioned? Total count was 24. The oldest fruit most recently discovered was a fossil in Patagonia, South America, at 52 million years old. It is believed to be of the Physalis family of fruits, such as the cape gooseberry, which is still harvested today in South American countries and Australasia. Perhaps not quite an odd pairing as it seems, because 50 million years ago, South America was closer to Australia and had a much warmer climate. The oldest British fruit is generally thought to be wild apples, dating back to the Stone Age. Here is the full list of answers read out in the order they were originally spoken. Pineapples, bilberry, loganberry, blueberry, orange, apple, lime, cranberry, blackberry, strawberry, jackfruit, kiwi, mango, cherry, dates, dragonfruit, blackcurrant, pear, grape, raspberry, apricot, banana, pomegranate, plum. If you did catch all 24 of them, well done. And if you missed a few, hope you still enjoyed the challenge.
TNF Soundings.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
Now, you may remember a few months ago, we focused on the Black Country towns that were vying to become Britain's first town of culture. Well, civic leaders in the Black Country have said it is ridiculous that nowhere in the West Midlands made the shortlist for the contest. A total of 37 towns in the West Midlands submitted bids for the competition, which was announced last year to run alongside the existing City of Culture competition. But no town in the region made the shortlist of 15. Councillor Stephen Simpkins, leader of Wolverhampton Council and deputy regional mayor for the West Midlands, had backed his hometown of Bilston for the competition. He said he was amazed that no town at all in the West Midlands had made the cut, but pledged to carry on fighting for Bilston. "It's an absolute disgrace. We have got so much to offer. We're a great way to the Wales and the North as well," he said. "We will carry on regardless. Our town is the greatest town anywhere. It's full of culture. It's a shame we didn't continue to the shortlist. Bilston and Wolverhampton have got more to offer than any other towns in the country. I'm really pleased we went for it. We did everything we could. We know in our hearts that we're the best." Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of the Dudley Council, said it was particularly unfortunate given that the announcement was made ahead of this month's Black Country Festival. Dudley, Briley Hill, Helzone and Stourbridge had each made individual applications for the status. Councillor Harley said, "That's disgusting that nowhere in the West Midlands has featured. When you think of the time of the year, with the Black Country Festival taking place and all the events that will take place. And out of all the places that applied, if they couldn't find anywhere out of those, that's ridiculous." Stafford and Burntwood also submitted bids, along with Shrewsbury, Bridge North, Warwick and Ludlow. Basildon, Birkenhead, Grimsby and Rotherham were the four large towns to make the shortlist, with Corby, Great Yarmouth, Leith, Pontypridd and Port Talbot being selected for the medium towns category. Ilfracombe, the Isle of Bute, Lerwick, Sandown, Strabane and Stockton Town Centre were the chosen small towns. Each of these will now receive a £60,000 grant to submit a formal bid for the next stage of the competition. The government said that 400 towns applied to the competition, demonstrating that culture belonged everywhere and shone a light on the many towns across the UK that were vital to the nation's story. So, while the news will understandably feel disappointing for many across the Black Country, it is also a timely reminder that the region's culture does not need a title to be celebrated. With Black Country Day falling on July the 14th, in a special feature provided by our Beacon contributor and volunteer, David Smith, we now turn our focus to one of the area's proudest musical success stories, Slade, whose rise from local roots to national fame continues to reflect the talent, character and community pride that the Black Country is known for.
The glam rock group Slade. When Slade were formed in the 1960s, they called themselves Ambrose Slade. The band members were singer Noddy Holder, drummer Don Powell, guitarist Dave Hill and bassist Jim Lee. The first album to be released was Beginnings, released in May 1969, but this did not make the charts. In 1970, they released Play It Loud under the band name Slade. This also failed to chart. Also in 1969, they released a number of singles which also failed to make the charts. These were Wild Winds Are Blowing and Shapes of Things to Come. In 1970, the single Know Who You Are was released and this also failed to chart. In 1971, the first single to make it into the charts was Get Down and Get With It, which peaked at number 16. Also that year, they released 'Cause I Love You, deliberately spelt wrong, which made it all the way to number one. In 1972, they had greater success with their first album to chart, this being Slade, released in November, which made it to number one. They had four singles to chart in that year. Look What You've Done, reaching number four. Take Me Back Home, making number one. Mama, We're All Crazy Now, also making number one. And Goodbye to Jane, which peaked at number two. All four singles had deliberate misspelling. 1973 was even more successful for Slade. Their first single was Come On Feel the Noise, which made it to number one, followed by Squeeze Me, Please Me, also a number one. And then My Friend Stan, which peaked at number two. The year ended for Slade with the release of probably their most successful release, Merry Christmas Everybody, which entered the charts going straight to number one. Two of these singles had deliberate misspelling. Also in 1973, they released a compilation album called Sladest, which made it to number one. 1974 was also a good year for Slade. Their first single to be released was Every Day, which peaked at number three in the charts, followed by The Banging Man, which also made it to number three. Their next and final single that year was Far, Far Away, which peaked at number two in the charts. This single was taken from their album Slade in Flame, released the same year. This album was the soundtrack to their film release of the same name. In 1975, Slade released How Does It Feel, which made it to number 15 on the charts. This single was also from Slade in Flame album. Their next single was Thanks for the Memory, which made it to number 7 slot. The final single that year was In for a Penny, which made it to number 11. The following year, the first release was Let's Call It Quits, which made it to number 11 also. They continued to make albums and singles throughout the 1970s, 1980s and early 1990s. And had a massive hit with the single My Oh My, released in 1983, which made it to number 2 in the charts. Without a doubt, Slade are one of the most successful British groups of all time.
Our thanks once again to David for sharing such a fascinating look at Slade, one of the Black Country's most iconic musical success stories. Staying with our celebration of local talent and musical heritage, we now turn our attention to another group that has been entertaining audiences and preserving the region's rich cultural traditions. The Gentlemen Songsters from Kings Winford in the Black Country have been performing for almost 70 years and have been describing a recent opportunity to record at the world-famous Abbey Road Studios as an unbelievable experience. Members of the Male Voice Choir travelled to London to record a charity single at the venue, widely regarded as a mecca for music lovers. The 48-member choir recorded their version of the Black Country anthem, with proceeds from the release set to support the cancer charity Maggie's. The anthem was written 10 years ago by James Stevens to celebrate the history and sense of community in the region. "It's wonderful," the writer said. "It's somewhat unbelievable to actually get it over the line and to be here and to record the Black Country anthem on this hallowed turf." His lyrics are sung to the tune of "I Vow to Thee, My Country," and when released resulted in a million clicks on YouTube, he said. "I pitched this to the guys, and we're better," he added. "It's pinch yourself time." During the Beatles' 1968 recording of Abbey Road, John Lennon was recorded ad-libbing an introduction to Hey Jude, saying, "From the heart of the Black Country." "It does really feel quite fitting," added Stevens, "because these boys really are the heart of the Black Country." Among those making the trip was choir member Reg Utting, who also drew a personal connection with one of the studio's most famous acts. "I was born in Liverpool in 1944, which is the same era as the Beatles, he said. We're here, and I'm enjoying it every minute. For fellow singer Steve McEwen, the charity chosen to benefit from the recording has special significance. In 2020, he went to hospital expecting what he thought would be a routine checkup after feeling unusually tired. I was in there for 6 months in the end, in isolation, partly to do with COVID, he said, but partly because they very quickly diagnosed the fact it was leukemia. While he was in hospital, the choir continued rehearsing online during lockdown, something he said helped him through some difficult times. The NHS, my wife, and family were always important, he explained. But to have the choir there and be singing was fantastic. Inside the studios, choir members reflected on the generations of musicians who recorded there before them. You see all the people that have been here in the past, said Ian Davis. All the photographs on the wall. It's wonderful that we're part of that now. Dave Wiley said the experience had left him with hairs at the back of my neck. It was lovely, he added. And to celebrate Black Country Day this year, we have something a little special. With thanks to James and the members of the Gentlemen Songsters, time now to sing, move, and bob along to the tune as we introduce the re-recorded version of the Black Country Anthem.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!